You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, so hospitality, the no pressure way. I've got two kids. These are pictures of them when they were little. Aww. But here they are now. And in fact, this picture is even a year old because my son is even taller than my daughter now. Sophie is 18. She moves out in 2 weeks. So that is done. Matt is 16 and, you know, he's barely home because he drives now. It's kind of wild. You always hear how fast it goes. Swear to God, it goes really fast. I know it doesn't feel like it sometimes, but it really does. So I wanted to spend some time today just thinking about the idea of hospitality. Now, hospitality, if you look up the definition, it's the friendly and generous reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, or strangers. And actually, as I was Googling it, I realized there's a whole hospitality industry that you can get degrees in, that you can get jobs in. It's the business of providing food, drink, and accommodation for customers. So you're providing a service for people that need it and are paying for it. And as I was thinking and praying about this, I was just realizing how much our culture has made this into a business and has put all sorts of pressure on us related to this. You think about hospitality versus entertaining. That's really, you know, I want to separate these into two different categories because we're going to advocate for hospitality, but I think a lot of times when I think hospitality, I actually think entertaining. Now, recently, Martha Stewart talked about how she republished her famous book on entertaining. And of course, you see any pictures about what Martha Stewart is doing, and I'm like, my kitchen has never looked like that. Here's the book. It's now in paperback, if you guys are interested, which I'm like, my table has never looked like that. And if you just Google hospitality or entertaining, you know, there's pictures like this. And I'm like, I've never even been to a party that looks like that, let alone put one on. And so here's some of the things that come up when you Google entertaining. Easy Entertaining, a book that you can purchase. Expert Tips for Entertaining on a Budget. Pro Planner that will make you a better entertainer. And I'm just like, I need to buy a planner in order to be able to do this. And here's easy ways to do it that make it look really fancy and, you know, this just feels really intimidating to me. So from her excellent book, Open Heart, Open Home, Karen Maines kind of distinguishes between hospitality and entertaining. She says, entertaining has little to do with real hospitality. Secular entertaining is a terrible bondage. It sources human pride, demanding perfection, fostering the urge to impress. It is a rigorous taskmaster that enslaves. In contrast, scriptural hospitality is a freedom that liberates. Entertaining says, I want to impress you. Hospitality, however, seeks to minister. It says, this home is not mine. It is truly a gift from my master. I am his servant, and I use it as he desires. Hospitality does not try to impress, but to serve. And so as we're talking about hospitality, the no-pressure way, it's because we're not trying to impress anyone. And in fact, part of the point is, as we seek to open up our lives and our homes to people, they're actually going to see how unimpressive we are. We're going to be bringing them into the reality of our lives. And that's part of why I think we don't want to do it, is because we would much rather put forward something that's really impressive and have people be impressed with us. But that actually can become a barrier and can keep us from viewing this the way that God views it. And so biblical hospitality is the idea of welcoming visitors, and even broader than that, it is the love of strangers. When the Bible talks about hospitality, it's not just, you know, putting on a party, it's bringing people in and caring about people that are different from us. And the biblical words are Philadelphia, love of the brethren, is, you know, the same as, or related to, but different from philoxenos, which is the love of strangers. And so when the Bible talks about hospitality, it's not talking about what dishes you have or what sort of food you're putting on the table. Instead, it's about the love that you have in your heart for people that are different from you and not closely related to you. And so the definition that we're going to use today is this. Biblical hospitality is welcoming people into our lives, our families, and our homes. And it's kind of all of those all wrapped up together. And this is something that shows up throughout the pages of Scripture. You know, Jesus taught that it was a way to serve him. Towards the end of his ministry, he says, you know, I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. And his followers say, well, when did we do that? And he said, well, whenever you did that for the least of one of these, you did that for me. So this idea that as we're serving other people, as we're trying to meet their needs, that Jesus says that that's the same as serving him. Hospitality is also an important character quality for leadership. There's two offices of leadership in the New Testament, elders and deacons, and hospitality is listed for both of them. And it makes sense because it demonstrates some underlying values that I think go along with being a sacrificial servant leader. It demonstrates a focus on relating over functioning, that people come first as opposed to my schedule. It shows that we value people over things. I mean, if there's one thing that's going to happen if you open up your home and your life to people is your stuff is going to get messed up. And are we okay with that? Are we okay with the fact that things are going to get broken, things are going to get dirty, things are going to wear out faster than if I, you know, tried to protect them? It also means that I'm trying to put my time and my energy at God's disposal. That my schedule itself belongs to him, because welcoming people in is going to be extremely inconvenient and will keep me from doing some of the things that I want to do. Now, I want to make clear that when we're talking about opening up our lives and our homes, it doesn't mean your home and your life is a free-for-all and that people can come in anytime that they want. If you read any of Edith Schaefer's works on family, she talks about how family is a door that has hinges and a lock. And so there are times when the door should be able to open, and there are times when you need to close the door and keep people out. And so this is, you know, not some sort of radical, there's no privacy, but in general, that we have to accept that this is going to be very inconvenient at times. So this is a character quality. It also allows God to use our families as a blessing to other people. Again, what Maines has to say, I'm going to be quoting from this book a lot. She says, many of us have been given a most remarkable tool through which to minister, the miracle of a Christian home. I did not grow up in a Christian home. And my family was actually very involved in different aspects of community. We had a church community, we had a neighborhood community, we had a school community. And when I look back at family photos, I realize how often we were with other people, which was really cool. But I didn't have specifically Christian values because my parents didn't have a relationship with God. And now to think that I am able to live in a Christian family, to raise kids in a Christian environment, it's really cool. And it's a blessing from God, and it's something that I can't believe that I have the privilege of having. And so this is what God wants to show to the world, is that Christian families are not perfect. Christian families have problems, but that they work at a foundational level because they're based on God and on his truth. And so your home and your family specifically, with all of its messiness, is part of the reality that God wants to use. And so that's the next thing I want to just think about briefly, are just basic obstacles to hospitality. And the top one for me is just my pride, that I don't want people to see the messiness of my life. Letting people into your house means they will see the mess. Again, Main says, I must never put my pride before my hospitality. Memories of my family home linger in the child part of my mind. Comfortable clutter, the dining room table, a collection center for books and mail and jackets, which I'm like, oh yeah, my dining room table collects a lot of things. And if people come in, they're going to see that. But she points out, visitors never seemed offended, but visibly relaxed in the face of all this informality. Ties were loosened, jackets removed, shoes discarded, and feet propped up on the coffee table. It's funny, she obviously was writing in an older time. This book is a little bit older, and you can tell based on some of her writing, because she talks about, you know, having a nice simple dress that you can put on when people come over. I'm like, okay. So guests come over and they take off their ties, and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But of course, the point is, if people come into a house that is perfectly clean and organized and beautiful, they're not going to feel like they can relax. So to have a house that's a little bit messy, they're going to come in and feel like, oh, this is cool. I can be cool here. And that's actually a good thing. So letting people into your house means that they will see the mess literally, but also metaphorically, because they will see what your life is like. And when I think about it, the number of times that someone was sitting at my dining room table very uncomfortably as Scott and I were arguing about something, or I'm hanging out with someone and my kids do something and I snap at them, and my friends are just sitting there like, well, this sucks, and you know, not really what I want to be a part of. But at the same time, what was fascinating to me was to see that people actually appreciated seeing that, because what married couple doesn't argue about things periodically? And for them to be able to see that we disagree and yet are also able to work through it and reconcile, and that this was not going to lead to alienation, to see that I would snap at my kids and then I would apologize to them, just brought people into, this is what family is like, and it's messy and it's imperfect and I have a lot of problems. And if anything, I think it made our family more approachable. So there's the pride that gets hurt when people see all of our problems. There's also just the stress and anxiety that we put on ourselves when it comes to hospitality. In his great book, Crazy Busy, Kevin DeYoung says, too often hospitality is a nerve-wracking experience for hosts and guests alike. Instead of setting our guests at ease, we set them on edge by telling them how bad the food will be and what a mess our house is and how sorry we are for the kids' behavior. Oftentimes things that they wouldn't even notice, and we're the ones calling our attention to it. And so we stress ourselves out, which means we're stressing our guests out because of all these expectations that we're putting on ourselves. And I think some of that comes from taking too much on myself. When I'm trying to open up my home, open up my life, am I taking the full burden on myself of all the tasks that need to be done? I have learned to say, and I still have a hard time saying this, but I have learned to say when people come over as they're getting ready to leave, could you please, blah, blah, blah. I host a women's Bible study at my house Friday night. There's anywhere between 6 and 18 of us that show up to that, which means, you know, tables have to be put out and chairs have to be put out. We do dinner beforehand, which means, you know, my stove is being used and my sink is being used. And for the longest time, I thought hospitality meant I was the one that had to clean up the whole house after everybody left. And then my husband would get home and be like, this place is a disaster. Did you ask the girls to help clean it up? And I was like, well, no, it's my job. Well, none of them mind helping with that. It's just most of them aren't paying attention. And so now it's, hey, do you guys mind grabbing the chairs before you go? And if you have 8 people doing it, it goes a lot faster than if you have 1 person doing it. And you know what? They did not mind doing it at all. And so asking people for a little bit of help, if you are getting together as a group, are you trying to provide everything that the whole group needs? I'm on a Slack line with some friends who are younger moms, and I love seeing all the messages about the upcoming play group that they're part of. And it's like, just watching, I'm bringing this. And it's like the funnest thing to see, okay, nuggets and strawberries and veggie straws, that's 100% a meal for a kid. And they don't care. And so no mom is like, okay, it's my job to lay out a whole nice spread for all of these children who are coming to my house. Instead, it's much more a team effort, and people are showing up with the most random stuff. And it's actually really cool to see. The number of times I would be hanging out with people, and when my kids were little, I was standing for most of it because I was either cooking or I was folding the laundry. And you know what? Those girls didn't care. I was still talking to them. I was trying to pay attention as best I could with a couple of little kids running around. And it's like, I don't have to have this wide separation between my functional life and my relational life, that they can be mixed in together. And that's just part of what it takes. And so having said all that, I wanted to offer just a few ideas that have been helpful for me. And again, these are just ideas, and we have time. If you guys have other ideas, I'd love to hear them, because what's a better thing to do than steal each other's good ideas? So here's the ones that I came up with, and then I want to throw it out to you guys just to see what else works for you. One, I would suggest clean on a schedule, not before people come over. And when I say schedule, I don't mean a rigid schedule, but it's just, you know, there's a day that you can vacuum on, and it doesn't have to be right before everybody shows up to your house. I remember at one point we were having people over, and I was vacuuming like crazy, and I realized, wait, why am I vacuuming before people walk all over my floors? It was actually fall, and we have one of those locust trees outside with the little teeny tiny yellow leaves that stick to everybody's shoes. And even if they take their shoes off when they come in the house, which there are a lot of times where people come over to my house and I'm like, don't take your shoes off because it's raining or it's snowing and half the people have taken their shoes off and half haven't. And so whoever takes their shoes off, their socks are getting soaked. And so I'm like, just leave your shoes on. Who cares about the floors? But this idea that I'm going to run around and clean everything up. First of all, people don't notice. I can't remember ever going over to somebody else's house and being like, well, I can't remember the last time they dusted. I don't see it. They're not going to see it. And so if you just have a basic time where you do this chore and then this chore and then this chore, I mean, there's some things that I try to do before people come over. You know, you wipe down the bathroom sink and you take out some of the stinky trash. Beyond that, your guests are not really going to care. Basic order in your house so that they have a place to sit is more important than how clean your house is. I wish I could have, I had the technological ability, but I don't. But there's all those funny videos that you can see on YouTube, on Facebook, of, you know, making fun of the mom who's running around screaming at the family about company coming over. And she's like, make your beds. No, just forget about it. Throw away your beds. They can't see that we have beds. It's like, yeah. Have a place where you just kind of shove all the clutter and then close the door. And what guess, if they want to open up that door and see what's in there, that's on them. You know, that's not my problem. Here's something that we started that was helpful. I can't remember where I read about this, but someone suggested a toy library to reduce some of the clutter. Because that was the biggest source of clutter, was just kids' toys everywhere. And so what we did was we took a huge bin in the basement and we put 90% of their toys in there. And then we said, every Sunday, you can check out 5 new ones and put the 5 ones from this past week back in the bin. And one, that kept the toys feeling fresh as opposed to they were getting bored with them because they got new ones every week. And two, it just reduced the amount that was in the house. Now, what was really funny about this is we did this, I mean, we're not the most consistent family, so it was about every week and a half, 2 weeks, for a while, until we just kind of forgot. And then the kids never noticed that there were toys that they never had access to. And so it just reduced the amount that was in the house. And that makes it easier to, one, just kind of straighten up a little bit before people come over. And two, if you're having other kids over, two children seem to be able to spread the toys out 5 times as far as one child. And if there's less for them to spread out, then there's less to worry about after the hangout. I try to do as much as I can to reduce my mental load, the things that I'm trying to remember to do. And so something that I have come up with is shopping lists where I basically just went through and tried to figure out every single thing that I order on ClickList on a regular basis, and I just put it in a Word doc. And then I print that out once a week when it's time for grocery shopping, and I go through. We have a storage space in our basement and an extra fridge, so there's some cold stuff down there as well as, you know, cereal and canned goods. So I start in the basement, and then I go upstairs into the kitchen and pantry area, and I just kind of look. We always have black beans on hand. We always keep, you know, tortilla chips. We always have certain kinds of yogurt. And this way, if I just go through and I look, what are we running low on? I check it off, and then that's part of my order, in addition to any of the special ingredients I need for whatever food that I'm making for that week. And I found that that was so helpful because there were always things that I would forget every single week at the grocery store. It's like, okay, I would remember eggs and I would remember milk, but this week I would forget bread, and then the next week I would forget to get more butter, and then the following week I would forget the favorite kind of cereal that the kids were buying. And so it was multiple trips to the grocery store to pick up the things that I was forgetting. And again, I can't remember where I thought of this, but I've got one for Kroger and one for Target. The stuff that I normally order at Target is on one sheet of paper. The stuff I normally order on Kroger, or now Amazon groceries, if you have Amazon Prime, that's awesome because it gets delivered right to your door. It's just, again, a way to keep things on stock so that if people are coming over and you need to throw something together really quick, most of your basic ingredients are right there. Could you use paper plates when people come over? At a certain point, my mom very generously gave me an absolutely, now this is not the actual picture, but it was an absolutely beautiful set of china. And it was like heirloom quality. And we had it in the basement. And I remember growing up that for some special occasions, my mom would get out her china and it would feel very fancy. But at a certain point, I realized we never got the china out because one, it was 8 place settings, and I can't remember any fancy dinner where we had only 8 people at it. There's usually somewhere between 10 and 14, so there were never enough plates to go around. 2, you can't put china in the dishwasher. You have to wash it by hand. So that didn't really work. And 3, again, nobody cares. When I'm sitting at Thanksgiving dinner, our family jokes that we get the fancy plastic silverware because, you know, it's kind of the silver color. And that feels like really, step up. Now, I put that use paper plates and I put a question mark after that because some people actually really enjoy doing the fancy thing, making it really nice. And if that's what you like to do, then you should do it. If you enjoy setting out the fancy settings and having a really nice table. So I'm not saying that's wrong to do. What I am saying is what makes for a good event is not the place setting. It's the conversation and the relating that's happening around the table. And so you could have the fanciest place settings in the world, and if everybody is not engaged in any sort of conversation and not trying to love and serve each other, then what good is a fancy plate? But if people come into your house and you've got paper plates and the most welcoming attitude in the world, they're going to feel like that was the fanciest dinner they were ever at. And they're going to love coming back. And then it's great because the cleanup is just a breeze and really enjoyable. My mother-in-law had this brilliant rule that we 100% adopted. She said, if this can't survive the dishwasher, it's not going to survive my house. And I thought, yeah, I had all these things that I was hand washing in order to preserve them as long as possible, which they end up breaking anyway, so why was I bothering with that? And, you know, there's a few things we don't put in the dishwasher, right? Because when you get married, you get to get a nice set of knives, and you're not supposed to put your nice knives in the dishwasher. But in general, when I learned that she had that rule, I was like, I married into the right family. This is great. So if it goes to the dishwasher and it gets ruined, well, then it wasn't going to make it anyway. So I like finding things that are really sturdy. Okay, here's an idea. How about letting people use your house when you're not home? When we bought our house right before we got married, we have never lived anywhere else but that house. And pretty early on, we felt the Lord calling us to use this house as much as possible. And that included people continuing to use it when we're not there. Now, we are gifted in hospitality, so that comes pretty easily to us. And this might not be feasible or something that you're comfortable with. But I wanted to throw it out there because this is something that I think nobody in our culture even considers. That each person's house is their house, and you might invite people over when you're there, but the idea that people would use it when you're not there is something that just doesn't really occur to a lot of people. And what I like about this is, one, it really does help other people feel like our house is their house. And again, when we're out of town and we see people on the Slack line and they're like, oh, where are we going after Central Teaching? And people are like, well, we'll just go to the Risleys. I'm like, great, because that's what you were going to do anyway. So why change the schedule just because we're not there? Another nice benefit is I actually think it keeps my house safer because anybody who's scoping out my house to see if they can break in, they literally never know when anybody is going to be there because it has nothing to do with my schedule. Also, there was one time that somebody broke into our garage and stole all of Scott's tools. I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars. We had somebody staying at our house while we were out of town, but our garage is not attached to our house. And so even with house sitters there, they still kicked in the garage door, the people door, and then opened up the garage car door and made off with all the tools. And so that felt like that was going to happen whether we were home or not, because our garage is off an alley. Nobody's ever tried to break into our actual house, at least not that I know of. Or, you know, I always feel like even if they do, they're not going to find anything of value in there. So honestly, the only concern that I have about somebody breaking into my house is they'll realize we don't have any nice stuff and just trash our place because they're mad. But this could be a way, again, to just keep giving your space over to the Lord. And then finally, if you're having people over for any sort of meal, just to keep it really simple and to have a few simple meals that you could throw together really quickly. The number of times that I've looked and I'm like, oh shoot, we are having people over for dinner tonight, and I had no meal planned, but I always keep one of those ropes of smoked sausage or kielbasa in the freezer downstairs and some pasta and some sauce. And I think at this point in my family life, I've served hundreds of meals of spaghetti with smoked sausage. And I don't think anybody would say that's any sort of fancy or gourmet meal. But the people coming to our house get fed, and it's good enough. Put a little Parmesan cheese on top of that. So good. And recently I was realizing that now that I'm working full time, I don't have time right before dinner to make dinner. And so I have all these recipes that I really like, but it involves standing at a stove and cooking, and the meal can't just sit there because it needs to get served right away. And I was like, well, I'm just going to switch to soups and crock pots because I can throw that together in the morning and put it on the stove, or, you know, several days beforehand and we can just reheat it. But again, you know, it's not anything fancy, but when people come over, we're able to provide something. And it's also a chance for them not to cook, which I think they really like. Let's talk about some blessings of hospitality. Why is this worth it? When, all right, let's be real. This is stressful. This is difficult. This is going to add to our burden. But there are reasons that we do this. One is it keeps us from caring too much about our stuff. I remember hearing from a friend years ago that she finally got the white couch that she wanted. And the way her friends served her was by not sitting on it. And I thought, you can get a white couch if you want. But there should be nothing in our life that's more important than the people. And for us to see ways in which God has used our house and used our stuff, even as it just gets used and worn down and ruined. But then I realize I don't actually care that much when it comes right down to it. Our dining room table for the longest time was a hand-me-down from my parents, which they bought when they first got married. So this thing was really old, and it was a great table. But when we pulled it out and put a leaf in it one time, after we had been using it for, 15 years, somebody sat on the middle of it, which just broke the table, cracked it right down the middle. And we're like, all right, well, you know, this thing made it, I don't know how long. I guess if my parents got it when they got married, it might have made it 40 years or something as a dining room table. And so we got a new table. We bought it used off of Facebook Marketplace. It was an Ethan Allen table. And the reason that the family sold it to us is because when they extended it and put a leaf in, the husband brought in a 9x13 pan and set it right down in the middle of the leaf. And so it's like a black walnut table. And so there's a perfect gray square in the middle of the leaf, the size of a 9x13. And we're like, well, this is perfect for our house. It's already ruined. So this table new, I think, was like $2,500, which is a ridiculous price. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Maybe you paid a lot for a dining room table. I would never pay $2,500 for a dining room table. It was a beautiful table. And it has the most finicky finish that you have ever seen in your life, such that if you put a cup down on it and the cup does not have a coaster under it, there's immediately a ring that shows up on the table. And it eventually fades as the table dries out. But the number of times that people have apologized for leaving rings on my table, and I'm like, look, the problem is not you. The problem is the table. The other thing about this finish is if somebody has a piece of paper and they write on the piece of paper, the words all show up on the table. So there are game scores that you can see in the finish. The F word is very clearly written in nice cursive on the finish. You can only see it in certain lights, but every time I'm sitting in a certain seat, I'm like, oh, there it is. Nobody was doing it on purpose, but they're just writing on a piece of paper on my table. And so what's great about that is the first couple scratches felt like, ooh, and by the 100th scratch or ring or mark on the table, it all kind of blends in. And there's a part of me that's like, we're never getting anything this nice ever again because we ruin everything. We recently replaced some couches, and even just the way our family uses the couches, the way my son and my husband are very large people, and they just plop down. And you can hear that couch getting creakier and creakier. And when we bought it, we were like, well, our son has 2 more years of middle school and 4 years of high school. I think we'll just replace the couch after all the high schoolers are done coming through our house. So it puts things in the right perspective. Practicing hospitality teaches our kids about the reality of other people's sufferings. Because what we're going to do is we're going to bring people into our household. A related word to hospitality is the word hospital. That people are suffering, that people are in pain, and to bring them into our world as a place where we can minister to them and serve them means that all of their problems are coming into our house too. And our kids are going to get to see that. Again, Karen Main says, there's a still deeper effect that has been worked out in our kids' lives by our hospitality to people in need. The influences seem to be only positive. It was nothing to grab a child as he scooted through the hall and send him off for a box of tissues for someone's tears. They learned not to be afraid of people's problems, but came to realize that human suffering is a part of living. I don't know how many times my kids have come into the dining room or found us in one of the quieter spaces in the house to ask a question and realize they can't interrupt right now because someone is crying. Or when they were younger, it was like, you can't interrupt right now. You need to go away. And it was normal for them to see people really struggling, to see people working through things, to see us trying to help them. And for them to realize that, you know, one, giving people space to be sad and to be in pain, but two, for us to be able to provide, for them to be able to open up and share was really helpful. And it's just part of what they know happens. It also demonstrates the power of God. If you open up your life and your house to people, something really powerful and magical happens. God does a spiritual work. Main says it doesn't really matter what size your rooms are. Somehow Christ expands the walls or compresses the people. We have never run out of space in our very small Clintonville home. Somehow everybody fits. And she says, we always seem to fit. It's the offering of what we have that counts, the depending upon him to create more from what we give. So this idea that, oh, my house just isn't big enough, my space isn't big enough. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But it's not just what God does with our physical space, the way he provides. It's also what he does in our own lives, the way he provides there. She says a little bit later, despite the pastoral responsibilities, the physical functions of life go on. And I love how she describes this. Laundry must be stuffed into machines, toys jammed into drawers and shelves, meals planned and prepared, dishes scrubbed, rooms straightened. That's just normal life. We have to do that whether we're having people over or not. She says, sometimes these material basics can be in hot competition with the needs of church and family. I came to learn to cry out to the Lord, you see what needs to be done in this house. You order my days. Invariably, when I pray this prayer and then cast myself into the day with this attitude, he does order them. The Lord will provide. You just have to step out and trust him. And what I want to do is I want to wait until everything's in order, and then I will trust God. And God's like, well, that's not actually the order in which it works. If you step out and trust me, I will provide everything that your family needs in order to be a functional family. And so the hospitality gives us the chance to see God demonstrate his power. And it also draws us back to God's grace over and over and over again. None of this is because we are so open, we are so hospitable, we are so capable of serving other people and opening up our lives. All of this is based on the grace of God. That God, yes, in his grace, offered us the forgiveness available through his Son, but that grace goes on into every aspect of our lives for the rest of our lives. That it will bring us back to the fact that we can't do this. And God wants to teach us that we can't. We can't do it in and of ourselves. But he can do it. And he wants to provide. So actually, right after the story of Martha and Mary that Lindsay shared, there's a parable about prayer where Jesus talks about a guy whose friend shows up in the middle of the night. And he goes to his buddy's house and he's pounding on the door. And what he says is, a friend has come to me and I have nothing to offer him. And Jesus is trying to teach through this parable that it's in the needs of other people that we're drawn back to our need for God. And that God does want to provide what we need so that we can serve other people. And part of how I see God's grace working in my life is every time I want to offer hospitality and I don't feel capable, every time I open up my home but I'm decidedly inhospitable in my heart and people are still there, and every time I put pressure on myself to try to attain to some sort of standard, God draws me back to the fact that he's pleased with me. He loves me as his daughter, that I've been adopted by him, blessed by him because of Christ. And in trying to serve, those are opportunities for him to remind me of what it is that he has already done for me and what it is that he will continue doing for me. And so let's just draw some conclusions here. God wants to use your family. God wants to use your family to bless other people and to show people the reality of who he is and how much he loves you. And so we can keep it simple and we can keep it real. We don't have to make this more complicated than it is. We don't have to put more expectations and pressure on ourselves. And as we attempt to do that, I just want to promise you guys that God's grace and love will shine through the reality of your home. And he will use it to bless other people. Lord, I am so grateful that you use people like us, that you use houses like ours, that you use lives like ours to demonstrate how good and how loving you are. And I'm grateful that through your grace, it's not because we're so impressive, it's not because we're so capable, but you want us to trust you and trust that this really is one of the paths to joy that you provide for us. And so thanks so much that you want us to live lives that are open to other people. Thanks that people get to participate in the lives that we're living and the families we're trying to have. And Lord, I just want to pray for each person here that you would give them just one thing that they could do to continue practicing this character quality of hospitality. Thanks for how you want to use us to show the rest of the world how very, very good you are to us and want to be to them. Amen.